So it's just a certain reality that we faced with. With respect to the members who are not here, some of them are still coming in on buses. That's another unfortunate reality with the buses. But let us open at the very least. And in my opening and welcome, before we even adopt the agenda, I would like those of you, perhaps very few, but still there were a few of you, who were here when we adopted the Promotion and Protection of Investment Bill, which was adopted, went to the NCOP, and of course was signed off and is now a piece of legislation. At the time, those of you who are, you know, frequent readers of either the press or social media, etc., well, no, there was a diversity of comment, most of it critical, and warning South Africa that we stood alone, so on and so forth. But one reminded them, those who were able to think more objectively, that when we actually passed our constitution, it was a remarkable document, way beyond the sort of the independence document of America or anything else. And people warned us, we'd have to worry about this constitution. Well, today many, in fact, emulate the content and the principles and spirit. And the same goes for the investment bill. And many of our strongest critics at the time, but also our supporters, came from Europe and America. And today I thought it of interest to share with you, and I won't read it out, I'll have it distributed, that the European Union members confirm their rejection of investor state disputes to settle EU-based investor claims. When you study the document, you will see many similarities to our own Promotion and Protection of Investment. So once again, we were leading the way there in developing, crafting a document, processing it through the National Assembly and the NCOP, and it's now a piece of legislation. And it's important that I think we do study this document because it does relate to what we are doing as well in the international arena. So I'm going to hand it to our assistant. There'll also be one that will be coming out, of course, but some hard copies can be made for you meanwhile. Also, in the opening, I want to just deal with the correspondence that we have received, and that is, we are due, of course, to adopt the first quarterly report, and we've received the DTI's response. We've also received the DTI's response to sugar, and we've written a letter to them on the latest engagement. The 20th of February 2019, we received a response from the NCC with respect to its engagement with the committee. And on the 21st, we received a response from the ECC with respect to its engagement. Now, we still, right here, we do have that with us. It was the last meeting, and I'm not sure if all members have got the ECC document. ECIC, I should say. If they don't, it will be coming. But these were questions to the committee. So I hope you've got that. I hope you've got the NCC documents, have you? I'm looking at members. You got that, those documents, that response? Because we, as we're coming to the close now, there may not be all this time to be checking. And And then we have one directly from the DTI, a copy of the letter that was sent to the speaker. Do you have that one? You do? All right, well, I'm sure you'll get it. And then the 27th, the response from the Director General with respect to the audit status of the ECIC, and the 28th of February 2019, a letter from the Minister in response to the Committee's recommendation in its second quarter on the DTI's financial and non-financial performance. So I'm hoping that you have got all of these documents. And if you don't, please check with our committee assistant here, who will assist you in that regard. Thank you. On that note then, we look towards the agenda. I have a proposal to make. And that while we still, you see, we now have 1, 2, 3, 4. I'm just looking, where is the other member? Very difficult to see. No, if she's gone to labour, she's gone for the morning. So I'm looking for the Honourable McLaughlin. Yeah. Unfortunately, the phone can't move. We can't move with just the phone. I wish we could. Well, then, just informally, I was going to suggest that as we can, as soon as we can continue, we could go straight into the SAD and do the minutes between the SADs and the triple BEE. But I'm saying this I'm doing just a... Can I please have someone to propose the adoption of the agenda? Honourable Buyani.
Madam Chair, I propose we adopt the agenda.
Honourable Williams.
Chairperson, I second the proposal.
No. We did that
noting we would deal with the minutes after that. Remember? Small amendment there. So we're going to go straight into SAD, and in getting straight into SAD, allow me to recognize several people, but before I do that, the apologies are from the Honourable Tierko, who's attending the Labour Committee, the Honourable Flangwini, Party Business, Honourable MacPherson, Party Business, the Honourable Kicharia, Party Business. The Honourable Hadebe, the whip, he's on a bus, which is still arriving, which should be here at 8:30. In attendance here on the DTI, looking at the most senior person here, but a lot of it is written in handwriting, and I know that you're all kind of connected with DTI, but the is the Group Chief Operating Officer here. Yes, I heard that we do have someone who's acting in that regard, but I'm wondering where the name has been. No, well, you are very welcome. Is there anyone else with you from the DTI specifically? Tandy Petty. Thank you. Please get that right. And then we come to SAS.
Members, we really need to maintain these numbers. Very important. Right. Apologies. I can now start over to you, Mr. Strachan. Thank you.
As I indicated, Shirley Scott.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. I'm Amanda Tabashi, the Executive for Certification.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Neil Stratton, the strategy I think you've just set up is also part of the team.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Just a few introductory remarks. On my part, before we hand over to Garth, we'll go through the actual presentation. Chair, I think since the Minister appointed the administrators at the South African Bureau of Standards, I think it's become very clear in doing the diagnostic at the Bureau of Standards that the Minister acted in the public interest when he terminated the board. I think there have been a number of issues that have come to light. The administrators, the acting CEO with the executive team have put a plan in place to identify what is mission critical work. And we are pleased to report, Madam Chair, that there have been a number of, we've made progress on a number of fronts within the Bureau of Standards. So for instance, on critical infrastructure, we've looked at upgrading that. We've had a revised stakeholder engagement plan. We've reintroduced what is locally called the partial testing, was the customer-specific requirement testing that's been reintroduced in an incremental, sequential manner. Garth will check to the annual reports. As the committee is aware, the Bureau of Standards received a disclaimer. I think also just reinforcing the minister's position in identifying that there actually was a problem that needs to be dealt with. The Garth will check to the progress around that and what's been put in place. Chair, I think I'd like to report that there has been progress. I think the progress has been, there's been steady progress, but there is still lots of work to be done. And at this point, I'd like to hand over to Garth, who will take us through all of the detail. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to just recap on some of the performance in the annual report for the 2017-18 financial year, deal with some of the progress on the SAS turnaround, perhaps give us time constraints to mention a few issues related to the corporate plan 2019-20, and then give an update on the Eskom investigation. Perhaps to start with some good news, the SAS currently maintains north of 7,000 standards, and 314 standards were published in the year. We didn't meet all the ARPA projects in the 2017-18 year, and I think perhaps the biggest problem in the standards space is the turnaround time. Bear in mind, if you look at the bar graphs on the right-hand side, many of South African national standards called SANs are ISO standards which are adapted for South African conditions. The turnaround time in the development of standards, the capacity in the technical committees and the participation in the technical committees is something which the annual report suggests are serious problems. The total revenue of SAS in that financial year was 760 million, and the loss from the year, for the year was 48.2 million, and it's one of the main reasons why the Auditor General gave SAS a disclaimer audit opinion, and I'll speak to that in the turnaround plan. I think that just to give the committee a bit of detail, the revenue in certification fell precipitously in relation to the permit expiry issue, which the committee is aware of, and the graph on the left-hand side gives an indication of that. The revenue in laboratory services has increased slightly, and the revenue in standard sales has dropped. That's of significant concern, but in training it has been rising slowly. Just to perhaps add Jody Spokes, the chair of the administration team, has indicated the need for a turnaround strategy was driven by it's a very significant increase in customer and industry complaints, substantial governance and operational performance concerns, weak financial position, and significant sustainability concerns. Just to set that out, unsustainable adversarial policy and mandate on the part of the institution, significant deterioration in client relations, errors of judgment in relation to the fact that customer-specific requirement testing, or so-called partial testing, was stopped, which in part led to the decline in revenue, declining capacity and capability in testing infrastructure, which relates to the fact that there was insufficient investment in laboratory infrastructure, and as I said, suboptimal resolution of complaints, ineffective or suboptimal business processes with respect to permit expiry, the loss of accreditation by both SANAD and a global institution called BDA, which is in the automotive sector, and problems in the standards development process. With respect to human capital, the loss of critical skills and exodus of skills, especially engineers and technical experts, long-standing mission-critical vacancies, an arbitrary shifting of functions and personnel deployment, a suboptimal suite of policies, very pervasive bottlenecks, and degraded performance and consequence management where there were significant management failures and serious shortcomings and lack of CapEx investment in plant and equipment. As we said, the AG gave a disclaimer for this opinion, and there's been a precipitous fall in revenue and certification, which brings us then to what the administrative team has done. The first is a cost containment and revenue generation program being implemented, and the projected loss for the this year ending in March, we've managed to reduce, we think, from somewhere in the region of 50 to 24 million. The external audit, I've mentioned already, the additional fiscal transfers from the DTI, it emerges that fiscal transfers were done in 2010 for capital expenditure, and not all of that was used for the intended purpose, and so we are managing that process. And then significant problems and bottlenecks, especially in procurement. The additional planned investments relate to a deep dive financial analysis into cost and revenue structures, pricing models, and the rollout of an ICT, or otherwise known as a digitization strategy, in strange fiscal conditions, to secure greater efficiencies, integration, better customer engagement and experience. In relation to human capital, we've moved immediately to pull mission critical engineering and technical posts. We identified 60, and slightly north of 30 of those have been pulled. An internal program of communications and stakeholder management with respect to labor, the middle management, the so-called frozen middle management and staff, and the key issues to raise the productivity, the throughput, outcomes of the institution, and organizational skills audit and review, and a review of the organizational structure. We are hoping that by the end of the financial year, we'll have a full suite of policies in place, which will include the employment equity plan, the occupational health and safety, environmental management, training, learning, and development plans in place. With respect to certification, there was a standard certification undertaken in December, and thanks mainly to Amanda Kabashe, on my left, we maintained the product certification from Stannis. We've established a local content verification capability, and we are undertaking local content verification for 20 sectors designated for local content by the Department of Trade and Industry. The critical issue as we go to local content verification related to the mining charter and other procurement is we have to get a funding model in place to secure that local content capabilities. We've intervened to try to make sure that the problem with expired permits doesn't happen again, and to secure management systems and oversight improvement and client retention and revenue pipeline and growth. We're reviewing the business model, including in coastal regions, and increasing outreach and visibility to stakeholders and customers, and making the client relations, marketing and sales a core pillar of the institution rather than a nice to have operating on the margins of the institution. With respect to laboratory services, as Jody Scholes mentioned, we've reinstated customer specific requirements. We are putting in place an infrastructure investment program, redesign of the laboratory services delivery model, and improvements in progress. To give one example, we've invested in a new paint lab. We've engaged with the industry association who had left the apps and brought them back into the room and paid that chemical company back as clients on the back of investment in the paint laboratory. And the same is done, being done for the National Electricity Facility NEPFA, and if petroleum, chemicals, materials and agro-processing, and that's a bit of a pipeline of the expenditure. We need to be very careful, because unless you get the technical specifications for investment in laboratories right, which means bringing highly skilled engineers into the room, as has happened in the past, if you design the technical specifications for the laboratories incorrectly, you can end up with the wrong laboratory capabilities, as has happened in the past. Madam Chair, we also included, because we think it might be relevant to the committee, what are the key issues in the corporate plan, those in standards would be a full review of the current capacity and capability established in order to have an optimal structure aligned to best practice globally, and their national standards bodies obviously in most jurisdictions, including competitive peer countries, middle income countries. Refocusing and strengthening the technical committee output and productivity, better alignment with IFAP, because we need standards which support the industrial effort. We need standards in agro-processing, minerals beneficiation, mining capital equipment, energy efficiency, waste management and transport, to give you some perhaps sense of the focus that is required, that's simply because we mustn't be developing a standards framework which is not very closely aligned to the industrial sectors. And then there needs to be a strong improvement with other government regulators and industry as a whole. There's a very big opportunity which is increasingly being pursued in relation to working very closely with regional SADC and other countries, the standards, certification and regulatory authorities of those countries, and then a much better program to communicate and market the role of standards. I think it would be safe to say, in a global, fast-changing global environment where tariffs perhaps more on the back burner, the role of standards, both public and private, in global supply chain is absolutely and critically important. And to give you just a illustration of this, we are hoping to get into strategic relationships with not-for-profit global standards institutions where we can align product specification, which is basically a barcode, aligned to a standard, linked to the technical specifications and standards required in that value chain, linked to local content verification. And on that electronic platform, we can load a whole lot of other variables, including traceability for local content verification, and so on and so forth. The retail sector in South Africa already has the barcode system, and if we introduce this link to standards, we will not only have a much cheaper, more efficient local content verification capability, but we would support the private sector in South Africa, because believe it or not, in many industries, companies are procuring equipment which doesn't even have a barcode, let alone a standard linked to that barcode at the FAS mark scheme, in other words, as a mark of high quality. Madam Chair, in laboratory services, I've mentioned some of this. The key thing is productivity improvements, the infrastructure and equipment renewal, the rollout of the reinstatement of the customer-specific requirement testing, and the new business opportunities that exist, and perhaps most importantly of all, the training of all the laboratory staff. Our projections on the back of the turnaround strategy is that we will grow revenue from 2004 in 2019 to 318 million by 2021-22, which will be a significant contribution to returning the institution to financial sustainability. With respect to certification, the digitization of the key processes, the local content verification, and the overall customer engagement improvement, there are projections, and we've done a whole lot of work on this. Obviously, it depends on securing greater efficiency and management interventions are to grow the revenue from 335 to 396 million, and that will also be a significant contribution, should it materialize, to returning the institution to the sustainability which is absolutely required. In training, and this is, by the way, external training, aside from internal training, boosting partnerships with government entities, training in the African region, and blended and e-learning possibilities is a very important opportunity. Madam Chair, our Design Institute provides a significant, actually not significant, but some support for SMMEs. I think the critical thing that we are looking at now is the extent to which the Design Institute can support the black industrialist, and there is an important consideration which we have to attend to, is that we need a very strong relationship with the CSIR under the VSC, which needs to address design issues linked to innovation, technology transfer, which accompanies foreign direct investment, and technology diffusion. And as a country, perhaps that's an area which needs significant attention. And I'm mentioning this because part of the turnaround strategy is developing strategic partnerships not only with global standards and certification and testing organizations, but internally recognizing that we need stronger strategic relationships. Bear in mind, Madam Chair, that of the 800 or so average revenue of the, and it might be low, slightly lower than that, I'm talking ballpark figures here, income and revenue of the FAS, only somewhere in the region of 18% is fiscal transfers. FAS needs to compete in the commercial market in conformity assessing, conformity assessment, certification, and laboratory services. Madam Chair, the key focus areas, obviously the key thing is financial sustainability. We've modelled on the basis of all the interventions, the group revenue. There's a conundrum. Unless you invest in mission critical posts, filling mission critical posts, and laboratory services, which in the short term will add to your cost and has the potential to to, in the short term, lead to a higher deficit, you're never going to meet a revenue target. So, in you know, those are projections. Will we return the institution to full sustainability by next year? Maybe not, probably not, but by the following year, the outer NSEP year, we are confident that on the basis of the turnaround strategy, the appointment of a new board in towards the end of the year, and the board will appoint a new CEO, that we can return the institution to financial sustainability. Madam Chair, just in case there's a sense that we're not trying to do sufficient work internally, we have an integrated performance and management practice system in place, a much better remuneration and reward philosophy and framework. In the past, regardless of the revenue of the institution, performance management was being paid out, and we need to ensure that performance management is on the back of you know, excellent performance, and ensure that that gives me to for the sustainability of the institution with an institution-wide learning program in place and integrated wellness program. Madam Chair, to turn lastly in the interest of time to the issue of the Eskom forensic audit, the SAG shareholder was instructed by the the SAG's board, I beg your pardon, was instructed by the shareholder to conduct a forensic investigation into the circumstances surrounding the SAG's testing of coal samples at the Brakfontein mine for Eskom. The then board, SAG's board of directors, agreed to terms of reference for the investigation. A firm of auditors was commissioned to undertake a forensic investigation. Subsequently, in July, as everybody is aware, the Minister placed SAS under administration and dissolved the SAS Board of Directors. The auditing firm has submitted a draft report to the administrators. The administrators have not yet signed off on the report, pending further engagement with the firm on the scope of the investigation and consultation with the shareholder. I may add, Madam Chair, that the administrators and myself as the acting CEO are prioritizing this. We all recognize the importance of it. From a governance point of view, we are determined, and with legal advice, that there are a number of other issues. We can't, in our view, divulge the report in its draft form because it could prematurely implicate the lab managers responsible, and this has potential legal risk. We think that it's unfortunate that there's been a long delay in finalizing the draft report. Bear in mind that the forensic auditors could not get access to the Eskom management at the time, and Minister Davies had to intervene with Minister Kevin Gordon to secure access, and this also delayed the process. We anticipate, Madam Chair, that the report will be finalized by the end of the year and submitted to the shareholder. Madam Chair, I hope I've covered the key issues, both with, by the end of the financial year, and Chair, I hope we've covered the key issues in the annual report, the turnaround strategy, pointed to issues in the corporate plan, and the forensic audit. with your indulgence, I have been as quick as I can.
You know, I must say you appreciate the time constraints that we the faculty face. Thank you very much, Mr. Strong. And thank you for a very good conversation that covers the pertinent issues. Nevertheless, I think committee members would like to engage on this. So we see immediately the Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation. It is good news indeed, and I do hope that all of these changes come to fruition so that this structure or this entity that is still trusted by the public. I was recently on training, and they kept referring to these have got SABS standards, and I'm thinking, you know, and so the public still has some trust in the organisation, and I do hope that this all comes right. I'm also quite excited about the fact that you'll be looking into localization and putting that, because yesterday we had a report that one of the biggest problems was that there was nobody doing any compliance surveys or anything. So that's very good news. The question I have is, do you work closely with our metrology entity when it comes to standards? And if so, is that relationship capacitated enough? In other words, then, do they have the right capacity or the resources from government to do their job so that you can do your job? And if they fail to do their job, does that impede your job? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Briani.
Chair, thanks. Just two clarification questions. I wanted to check their success stories on a local context verification so far. And also on slide 5, life related means the employment equity plan were not implemented by staff for the all these years. The other board by staff critical human resource employees. In fact, they said they lost the critical human resource employees. So I wanted to check their recruitment strategy and also their retention strategy, whether they do it. But for information sake, I wanted to check because usually this international standard, yes, we welcome them. But at some stage, it depletes the capacity of our local staff as much as we like to have the international standard. So, what is our view in terms of that? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm glad you raised the human resource side of things, which we are concerned about. The loss of critical skills or the inability to retain critical skills in the public service. And I see measures have been put in place to address that. Sorry, Honourable Masolbo, I didn't see your hand.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair. Now, let's welcome your report, Chair. And note that the institution has been going through other difficulties and their attempts to stabilize. At least that the corporate plan has been produced now. It is time for implementation. One of the things that even the Chair is talking about, the technical capability and the filling of those critical positions needs to be fast-tracked, because the reports we are getting is that the turnaround times in certain of processing some of these issues take a little bit longer because of the skill that we need, and therefore that because we want to fill it, probably have a clear timeline, find a mechanism to throw those skills, but also investing in young people for the sector, so that at least this special and important area for standardization, we have young South Africans that can find their feet. One of the issues, I'm not sure whether they are assisting you to give you enough resources, because your infrastructure capability must be able to respond to the demand of the time for you to be able to do the things that you need to do. Whether looking at the current financial difficulties and constraints you have, what is the impact of building that infrastructure capability you need to do that? And then I'm happy that we are looking in terms of the horizon, at least the 8-year remedial action plan, to move from what was a very concerning audit outcome. It's a matter that needs to be worked on. But let's give you time, because at least you're getting the handles well. You need to be given time. At least the sense, and at least I'm happy that even the investigation was happening on the ESCOM net, it was an important matter that you attended to, and we're very pleased that it's been attended to. The issue, the last one, is the question of the comment that working with DTI and other agencies, with National Treasury, Economic Development, depending after the election how it will look like, but the work still has to be done. We need to start to assist, because those were presenting here the question around local content and local production. From a strategic point of view, to have the whole understanding of the value chain, from policies to strategic visions, including the instruments and entities like yourselves, because you have a role to play too. Knowing exactly that there are certain parts or elements that get into the country, sometimes they go below the radar because you don't have the enough capacity to be all over to check those some of the things. But like Comrade Williams is saying, we want you to come in with your own experience to say how do you assist so that they really need to industrialize and beneficiate and South Africa be not becoming a consumer, but also be a manufacturer of certain kinds of products we need. It's going to be very important that while we are looking at the copper plan, it's going to be a matter that we're going to keep a lot of attention to it, because we thought we, as much as some work has been done, but we're not where we are supposed to be. That's convention.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kicharia.
Thank you. Just one quick
question. Yes, I have to apologize about some misunderstanding on your attendance, but that's the information I was.
Just a quick question on the draft report on the COVID issue. When you say that the draft report will be signed off at the end of the financial year, and then in terms of that, what's the procedure? It will be made public today. When will we get that?
Honourable Kacharya, Honourable Matash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may have missed some information or some explanations, but on my form, there's a mention of a lot of 48.2 of the other way. What is the cause of the loss? I was asking Che if they can explain to me, and I would apologize if they had done this when I was not in the house. They mentioned that for the year, for the financial year, they had a loss of 48.2 million.
I think some of, most of the critical issues have been covered. What I'm very pleased to see is that when you look towards your objectives and where the decline and the challenges have arisen, you certainly have developed measures there. In particular, you have addressed the issue of permits. Because for us, the integrity of those standards is absolutely critical. We cannot compromise that in any way whatsoever. And it is quite heartening to see
that is one of the issues that you will be addressing. What I must also just comment is your cost containment measures, linking it to performance but the objectives into your three or four separate units. Of course, we are disappointed, and I'm sure I would echo the words of most of the members here, that we have not yet got the report back, and it won't be here in time, as you indicate. It will only be ready at the end of the financial year. And unfortunately, we are rising on the 20th of March. But I have no doubt, members, that that report will be robustly engaged with in the 6th Parliament by the relevant committee. And our legacy report will refer to it. But let us hand over to you and your team. Thank you, Mr. Strachan.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and to the Honourable Members. I'm going to take all the easy questions, leave the difficult ones to God, Amanda, Tina, to deal with. Honourable Williams, I do support the view that you've raised, that there is some confidence in the public regarding the SAS mark. I think the engagement that we've had in terms of the stakeholder engagements, I think Art mentioned engaging with the paint association, we've targeted a number of key industry associations. I think that work is slower, but it's steady, and I think we're sharing that collectively among ourselves. I think the challenge for us is how do we ramp up our response and make sure, I think as Honourable Mashoko has mentioned, that we are relevant and that we are targeting the right, and that there's a much closer line in using what we're doing in IPAC. And I think it's slower, but I think we will get there. I think, Honourable Kujani, the Employment Equity Plan, we've had a plan. We've also, I think the HR executive is fairly new in his role, not yet 6 months. And one of the things that we are driving is looking at diversity, particularly women, bringing women into the technical infrastructure space. And so I think that plan is definitely ongoing. But perhaps Scott can talk to that. I think the skills have been lost over a number of years. And there is a focus now. We've identified, I think, about 62 mission-critical persons in technical areas to support the work that we are doing. The infrastructure capabilities, Honourable Chogo, I think we support that. We've made some work in terms of looking at the infrastructure, but I think that requires huge investment in capital. And I think there is a plan in place to look at how we can make do with what we've got and what are the critical areas, and that would be that we started the first phase over the December holidays, and I think the plan is to look at that way forward. Also supported by a very strong digitization strategy, that where can we digitize and what can we kind of, where can we leapfrog in certain instances. Chair, I think the Honourable Victoria, the report, I think there will be robust engagement on that report. Obviously, following due consultation with the shareholder, and it will be guided by the outcomes of that. I think for us, the key focus has been to identify where can the institution itself make improvements and what has been, if there has been any institutional failings, what has those been, and how do we remedy that. But Chair, I think that's it. Maybe Garth and Peter can also come in on some of the other questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In relation to the question by the Honourable Williams, the Chief Director, who is also an administrator, Dr. Damane, represents obviously the shareholder. We have, in a sense, re-established a technical infrastructure institution forum. We are working closely with the NRCS, which is the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification Standards, which is the accreditation body, and NAMISA. There's a forum. We are doing a whole piece of work in relation to what is an optimal ecosystem of technical infrastructure institutions and what are our peer middle-income countries doing in this space to ensure that the industrial effort in a partnership with the private sector is adequately supported by the technical infrastructure and institutions. Bear in mind that the National Regulator for Compulsory Certifications is an independent institution which is responsible for those standards which are, and Amanda is going to correct me where I make a mistake here, for those standards which are codified as the regulation, whether it gets in health and safety and so on and so forth. And it's the NRCS which gives letters of authority, including for imports of those products, which is a standard which is enshrined in a regulation. Please also bear in mind that SAB is a member of the International Standards Organization, and so it's not that our standards development is a standalone process. In fact, most of the standards which are developed by the SAS are standards which come from the International Standards Organization, and so those are tweaked and amended for local conditions, and it's not the SAB that develops a standard. It's industry in technical committee. Skilled space And, you know, we also want, subject to financial sustainability, to literally fund the programs to support young persons with a strong focus on gender issues to be able to occupy the technical skill space, because at the risk of stating the obvious, that is absolutely critical for any employment equity plan that we would put in place. With respect to fiscal transfers, bear in mind that, and the Chief Financial Officer will correct me if I make any mistakes, on average, the shareholder has transferred 200 million to the DTI annually. We have received an extra 100 million ring-fence for capital expenditure in laboratories from the DTI. In other words, we can't use it for operational expenditure. The DTI's ring-fence is for investment in critical laboratory infrastructure. I think just to add to the point made by Jody Scott, the reports on the forensic audit will be ready by the end of the financial year. A decision has to be made on its status. It's obviously, the instruction came from the shareholder, the Department of Trade and Industry, and I suppose it's obvious that Parliament is absolutely in advance to interrogate that report, and it will be submitted. All we're saying is the instruction to conduct the forensic audit came from the shareholder, and once the administrators have signed off on the final report for reasons that I've explained, it then goes to the shareholder, and I'm assuming gets tabled in Parliament. And then lastly, the causes of the losses, Honourable Member Mantash, are simply on the basis of the fact that the decision to stop customer-specific requirements or so-called partial testing led to a precipitous fall in revenue. Then there were operational failures which led to the expiry of permits and the loss of clients, which also led to a precipitous loss of revenue in the permit space, in other words, the certification space. And then in standards, as the graph indicates, there's been a steady decline in the sale of standards. So I think it's across the institution. There was operational management and decision-making failures which led to a very precipitous, in some instances, loss of revenue. And at the moment, we have a situation where there was a 48, I think it was, million rand deficit for the 2017-2018 year. The 2018-2019, on the back of increased revenue and cost containment, we think, and the CFO will correct me, we can reduce the deficit to somewhere in the region of 25 million. Because we are investing in infrastructure and mission critical posts, it might potentially increase in the 2020-21 financial year, but we've done very significant work to suggest that by 21-22 we will return the institution to financial sustainability. Our CFO is the expert, and if I've made any mistakes with that analysis, please correct me. And colleagues, anybody who feels they wish to become in Amanda and Tina.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I think Garth summed up the financial position. We are focused, obviously, March is around the corner, it's another financial year in far. So we have plans in place to ensure that we review our financial statements, our income statement balance sheet on a line-by-line basis, so we proactively identify any issues. As Garth mentioned, we are seeing a reduction in the loss in the current financial year. I think there are critical plans and making use of a number of experts where we have to ensure that we can at least move from a state auditor to a far better one in the current financial year. So we are on track in terms of year end.
Honourable members, on local content verification, we actually do have positive news that we've built capacity now at the GM internally who's responsible for local content verification. It's also critical because one of the pillars of the mining charter requires that mining rights holders have to report on localization as well. So we've started to build up even additional capacity to be able to roll out verification into the private sector, which is not where we started originally. Of the 22 million that was transferred by DTI, it was ring-fenced specifically for about 64 companies that we need to conduct verification on, and that's an ongoing process because some of the tenders end up being multi-year tenders. So once that is done, as God has indicated, we will be issuing the report to DTI and for them to take action further on. What we've also done is that we are entering a partnership with Proudly South African, because what we find is that when people speak localization, the SAP is not usually in the room, and we are trying to be more visible and also speak about the way the process works so that industry and procuring agencies understand the way that the localization is actually carried out. A very real constraint, especially with public procurement, is the issue of who pays and the funding model for that. So we are in discussions again with DTI on how that needs to happen going forward. But we've had certain SOCs which have come forward and said they're willing to pay for the verifications for the tenders in their space, which is a positive move because we haven't had that before. But we are building the capacity, including building the platform, because for us that becomes a critical component, that if there isn't a platform which entities can access and query and get information at a buy time for companies, then it makes the whole localization drive quite difficult. So it's important that we upgrade our technology such that decisions at the time of buying or procuring are able to be made and not post the procurement or the awarding of the tender. That's the drive that we want to make.
Right. Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to add on what the FNCO has indicated, with direct reference to Honourable Williams' question as to whether the SAPS does work closely with the Metrology Department. In fact, the SAPS has just finalized discussions on the MOU with NAMESA, which is the National Metrology Institute of South Africa. So that, you know, to solidify that relation, that working relationship, and in fact, to create a close working relationship.
Thank you. Thank you. The head of legal services. Right, thank you. Members, I saw two or three hands. Some of you were not here when I indicated we would need to pass the minutes today. And that can only be not with four. We need a full team, a quorum for that. So for me, it is important for all of us that we do keep that in mind, and that is why I have to be quite firm here. Some of the points that have come up, Mr. Starkin, have pointed to localization because we are busy with that. And you referred to a report that, you know, you were preparing in this regard. That would link, if we could have got that sometime next week, even an interim one, it would be very helpful for us to link into
our finalization of that report. But as I say, it may even be an interim. It may not be your final. Is that correct, members? We want to try and get that. So, members, what I will allow members to do is, if there are some pertinent questions, can we have them, and we'll get a response in writing before Friday. So please, let's just hear them on record. Yes, Honourable Maslobo, Honourable Khadebe, Honourable Buyani.
No, just for the team, that they've done a fairly good job under the circumstances. Just on the question of the shortfall on the revenue targets, you will come back in writing like the chair says, whether there were any incentive that we paid to those who were responsible for not meeting the targets, like bonuses, because if you don't meet your target, you can't be incentivized. If it has happened, it's a matter that probably we need to look at to say what do you do, because performance is part of how we chose our labor relations architecture in the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll also concur with my colleagues that the report is a good one. But what I want to emphasize here, or I want to comment on, is the issue of the tripartite free trade agreement plus the continental free trade agreement. So how does the SADF position itself, its role there? Because when we look back, we saw that the trade between Africa and the West is only 3%. The trade, the intra-Africa trade is only 18%, which is quite low. But if with these two agreements I'm speaking about, there will be a free flow of goods across the continent, and the goods will also have to go abroad. So if there are not, proper standards there, it might have a problem. So how did you position the SADF for that new terrain? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable
Hadebe.
Honorable
Buyani. Thank you. I think on the human resource capacity and retention, we'll definitely need a return response. Because seemingly, if you're talking of turnaround strategy, of turning around an institution, we're talking of human resources. So if you are not be able to deal with that, then it's a challenge too. Then another one, Chair, on the international standards. I wanted to check with how much are the challenges of those international standards to us as developing countries. And
so
forth. Thank you.
Right. Please, if you would respond and expand as you wish just on that, so we get a clearer picture. We would have loved to have spent 2 hours with you, but unfortunately we do have time constraints. And we would like to thank the team. I know it's been very difficult challenges you've been faced with, for assisting a government and indeed the country in beginning the turnaround at South African Bureau of Standards. Thank you very much. Members, just to go to your minutes, please. The 19th of February. Have we all got this? Page 1. And don't forget to check the register against what is present, please. Right, page 1, page 2, page 3. I know we spent a lot of time here, so you are very well abreast of that. Page 4, the recommendations. And just as well, we have the triple BEE here today. We go on to the end of the committee decision there. Bottom and the adjournment, and finally the register. Honourable Williams.
I move for adoption, Chair.
Honourable Montash.
I second Honourable Williams.
Right. when they're voted. Thank you very much. That's the minutes of the 19th. The minutes of Tuesday, the 26th of February. Page 1. Just check the register, please. Page 2. Briefing on Sona. Page 3. I hope we're not forgetting Brexit there. You see a reference to it, the rollover agreement at the top of the page. And then the WIPO treaties. Page 4. Page 5. Adoption of the minutes of the 26th of February. Honourable Hadebe.
Chair, I move before the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you. And seconded by Honourable Kecharia. And which we need to keep on track with. You do know, I mean, we're rising on the 20th, the last day for us to look at this, it seems, as the 13th. We are running into time challenges and constraints here. I say that particularly for our WIP, who has to track this. A reminder to DTI on that matter, and also related to ourselves and the House and DTI, the treaties. The treaties must go forward. Honourable Hadebe.
The treaties are a program for the institution.
Further inquiries on, and I'm not sure if we have a response from DTI yet, that is Marrakesh. Okay, we've got a response. Right. Thank you. So, members, that's the 26th Tuesday. Wednesday, the 27th. We have page 1. Please, can we check the register? We have many, many apologies that day. Page 2. There's the reference you made earlier, Honourable Hadebe, the Continental Free Trade Agreement. Page 3. Have you checked the register? Right. We have someone to propose adoption, someone who was present. Honourable Buyani.
I was present. I write for the adoption.
Thank you. Seconded by Honourable Hadebe.
I second the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. So that takes care of those three sets of minutes. We do have another three outstanding. They are, quickly. Thank you very much, members. We can then move smoothly on 25-2IC to the broad-based black economic empowerment. And we have with us here someone we know very well, the Commissioner, Ms. Godwa Mthuli. You are very welcome. I know it's been a long time, but I'm so pleased you're handing out once again the broad-based Black Economic Empowerment little manual that we've got here for easy reference. And you have with you, is this right, Ms. Busisi Ngwenya, Executive for Compliance, Ms. Khabosele, Executive for Investigation, and Ms. Madal, is Madal or Madu? Madal, and Ms. But then you've got two of them, huh? And Ms. Daneo Madiklaba, investigators there. I hope we've mentioned all of you, but if we haven't, I'm sure the Commissioner will introduce. So if you could just introduce the remaining colleagues, Commissioner.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. And again, thank you very much for the opportunity to share with this committee the activities of the Triple B Commission. Chair, you have introduced everybody. All I just need to say, Chair, is that since the last time we were here, in terms of just the changes, is that Ms. Kawesele is our head of investigations, who joined us only this month, and we're hoping to see at least a lot of activities as well in that area. As you recall, that we indicated the issues of capacity building, and so that's an introduction that I just wanted to make. And in terms of the two investigators that we have here, Madam Madisaba and Madam Modau. Chair, I must mention that these are the investigators who started with us as our trainees, and they have now been absorbed into the structure of the organization, and we are really happy to have them today for exposure to also be in a position to share with us the session for today as well. And we also want to allow the DTI, which is our parent department, to just introduce themselves quickly, and then we'll move into the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Jacob Maputa, Chief Director for Black Economic Empowerment at the DTI.
With that, Chair, and with your permission, we'll get into the presentation. Chair, our presentation has a number of slides. We will not cover all of them. Some of the slides are for information. However, we will highlight some of the key issues that we think are important for the committee to consider and perhaps to engage further on them. Chair, one of the things that we have noted since we started operating in the Triple B space is that the Triple B as a concept is something of value, and we see it every time when companies are introducing themselves. They'll say, I'm a Triple B level 1, I'm a Triple level 2. I think what is important for the Commission is to ensure that whatever level that a company says it actually is a real level. I think that is what we would like to see, that when a company puts that mark on the side and say level 1, level 2, level 3, it must be a real level. And so our oversight functions are actually wanting to drive towards that. But what we also want to see is that if a company says that we are an empowered company, we want to see that it is empowered in all facets. We know what are the elements that the BBBEE covers. We cover ownership, management control, skills development, enterprise and supplier development, and the socio-economic development. So whoever says that they are an empowered company would like to see that they've actually covered all of those areas, and that they are actually real, and that there is no fronting behind those schemes. So that is the role of the Commission, really, in general. Chair, since the last time we were here, I would like to just indicate that our challenges have not changed. So we will not dwell on them, because as I said the last time, that when we were given this mandate, we were given a mandate without any resources.
And so instead of lamenting and complaining, we are public servants and we understand what needs to be done, and we understand that there's a need to deliver services to the public. The public that continues to be fronted, that continues to be abused through this BEE scheme, cannot wait for government to say, now we have resources. So with the little that we had to move. And so what we'll be sharing with you today is what we have done despite the challenges that we have, because we do not want to dwell on the challenges. However, would like to still reiterate the challenges for this committee so that the committees are aware of them. Chair, you'll recall when we came here that we said we do not have a budget. We still don't have a budget. We still operate on 0% in terms of budget. And we rely and depend solely on some of the DTI transfers, not necessarily transfers to the commission, but where our activities require funds, then we will then do that through the budget of the DTI. And that is not sustainable. So we're still in the same level. And then in terms of the listing, the commission is supposed to be listed as a public entity. That process still has not been completed. All the relevant submissions and documentations were submitted to the National Treasury. The commission still awaits the listing. So the issue around the listing, the effect of it is that the commission cannot transact on its own. For anything else, including, for instance, our office space, we've got to transact through government. For instance, for office space, we're still waiting for the Department of Public Works since 2016 to allocate us office space. We're still waiting today because we cannot transact on our own as an entity because we are not listed. So that is the effect of the delay in the listing. We were hoping that already in 2018-2019 the commission would have been listed, but that has not been forthcoming despite everything being done and having delivered accordingly. So on our side, we've done everything that has been required for purpose of that process to be completed. It has not been completed yet. In terms of the office space, Chair, you recall that we said because we did not have office space, we did not have a budget, we then negotiated with the National Gambling Board to allocate us some of the space that we thought they were not using. And that space can only accommodate the number that we have right now, which is only 38 people. And with the addition of Ms. Kavoyizile, we are now 39. So we're operating with 39 people. So that office space that was borrowed to us by the National Gambling Board can only accommodate that, which means that even if we want to add capacity for any reason, because we do need the capacity in any event, we will not be able to do so because there's no way where those people will operate. That's one thing that we must mention. And in terms of the these challenges, as I said, that they do remain, and some of the challenges are in our strategy document and our ATT. We have the last time indicated that Parliament perhaps need to consider the issue around some of the amendments in the next Parliament to deal with the over-criminalization of the BBB legislation. And as we share with you our activities, in terms of the cases, you will see why we think that it's necessary to give the Commission administrative powers instead of criminal powers, because we don't have criminal powers in a sense. We've got to investigate and refer matters for criminal processes. And that is not doing well for redress to people that are affected, because those cases have got their own time frame, controls that are not within the Commission's parameters. So having said that, and as I indicated, we did not want to lament. There is a legislation that has got functions for the Commission. So Section 13F explains what our functions are. And if you will see on the, if we go to the slide, the next one. If we go on the slide around our functions, so our functions are in 13F. So in terms of the legislation, we must perform against those functions, whether or not the money is there. So we are doing that. And Buzi will take you through the presentation and show you how we are doing that in practice. But I have prepared those slides particularly to show that we are actually expected to perform against all of those functions because the industry, the people, and the market is not waiting for us to have some money that has been allocated. Chair, in fact, as the SABS was presenting, I was very envious because we are talking about 760 million. And I'm reporting here on activities on a zero budget. I've got nothing, basically. But those are the activities that we'll be presenting. And Chair, the other thing that we also just need to highlight before we do our presentation again is going back to the issue about what we see as a concern around black, broad-based black economic empowerment. There have been a number of statements that are made around it, but I think what we would like to do today is to draw the committee's attention again to the definition in the Act itself, and the Act that this committee drafted, and the Act that this committee passed. We've said, other people have said that it's not broad-based enough, but if you look at the definition, it was amended by this committee specifically to include black people, but in particular women, workers, youth, people with disability, and people living in rural areas. And so if you look at already what it means, it covers all of the elements of what black economic empowerment means in a broad sense. So, Chair, what we have done is just to allocate in terms of what then has happened after the legislation was passed to align to that definition. So if you look at the slide that we've just projected, you'll see that in terms of the definition, it says that the BBBE means the viable economic empowerment of all black people, in particular women, workers, youth, people with disabilities, and people living in rural areas through diverse but integrated socio-economic strategies that include but not limited to. So it then indicates increasing the number of black people that manage, own, and control enterprises and productive assets. It goes, say, facilitating ownership and management of enterprises and productive assets by communities, workers, cooperatives, and other collective enterprises. So when we see a number of trust models, a number of BBOs, a number of ESOPs, like the employee share scheme, they are trying to actually move towards broadening their participation by black people. So it goes to exactly what this committee envisaged in its definition. And it also talks to human resources and skills development. It talks to achieving equitable representation in all occupational categories and levels in the workforce. That is complemented by the employment equity legislation as well. And it talks to preferential procurement from enterprises that are owned and managed by black people. This is what government should be doing primarily, and also the private sector in terms of its procurement. And also the last one, it talks to investment in enterprises that are owned or managed by black people. This is some of the areas where we also need to look at the enterprise and supply development elements, but also to look at investments by our government institutions such as the PIC, where it actually goes towards investing in black-owned enterprises. So, Chair, we just thought let's reflect again on the definition so that some of the questions about whether or not the PE is broad-based or whether it benefits a few people or a majority of the South Africans, that we can actually move from there in terms of understanding that. So I'll hand over to Madam Busi to then take you through the presentation. Thank you.
Morning, honourable members. I'll just take you through the activities that we have done for the past 3 years, because we thought we should need to look at the current admin and see what we said we'll do and how we've achieved those mandates. Looking at also at our functions to see with regards to those functions, how we have been implemented. So when you look at the first one, it talks about monitoring and supervising and promoting adherence to the Act, or how companies implement and government implemented the Act. What we do there is that on a daily basis, we monitor media, the media to say what's coming out. Sometimes we see people announcing that they're level one, But when we call those transactions in, then we assess them to check that they are actually aligned to the Act. And also what we have done is that we have seen a number of invalid triple B certificates and some other budgets that are still being issued by accountants or people that are not accredited by SANAS, which is your South African National Accreditation System. So those, we have actually declared them invalid, and on our website we have a list of them. So if companies, for instance, want to engage with another company and they want to check whether their certificate is valid, they can visit our website to check if those individuals are not on that list. What you also receive now is people coming in giving us tip-offs, anonymous, which is say, we think company A is fronting their black directors or they are fronting people through management control. And at times the tip-offs are changed, just a one-liner, which doesn't give us much to go on. But what we have done then is to say we should not dismiss them completely. We do what you call now a misrepresentation letter, where we write to these companies and actually say, can you give us your breakdown of ownership? Give us your breakdown of ownership, your shareholders agreement, your share certificate, your memorandum of incorporation. And through that, actually, Chair, we must mention that we have referred 35 cases based on those tip-offs for investigation. And what you also have done now, couple of that, is what you call site visits. With site visits, at times we just walk up with the company just to check if those black directors actually exist and interview them. And at times, there's one entity that the guys went in there, they found the person's reception, working as a receptionist. And when they went inside and asked for the director, then she was called from the reception to come and attend the meeting. So we have found that these site visits are actually playing a big role. But what we need now is a cooperation with SAS, because it can be quite dangerous to send officials on these errands. We saw with one that we had in Feb, where they were actually almost kicked out of their premises. But then it tells us that there must be a story, because if somebody kicks you out, it means they're hiding something. So then it gives you much better leverage to go after that entity. So that's another intervention that we put into place. Yeah, we need that. Yes. And then we had our 612 meetings and walk-ins. Walk-ins is people who just come in without having arranged a meeting. And we must inform the members that on the 2nd of January we're at work, and we're three walk-ins on the 2nd of January. So it shows that our services are being recognized and appreciated by the public. We were quite shocked, but we didn't go to work for nothing. And then in terms of strengthening collaboration, which is one of our functions as well, we have had engagement with your Yobusa, your Law Society of South Africa, your Judicial Institution of Southern Africa. We also had a visit from the World Bank REF, but their interest was on the IPPs. They wanted to know how we Triple B is centered in under the IPPs. So it was quite a robust engagement. We also had a team from Ghana visiting us, Chairperson. They were looking at establishing a model similar to Triple B, but looking at just transformation in their own country. So we gave them information on how we implemented Triple B. Now, in terms of the investigations, so far we have received 142 that were direct complaints from the public. But also on our own, we have initiated 42 investigations, some based on anonymous tip-off as well, and then we have prescreened most of this. Now, 167 cases have been closed off. That means we have looked at them, and some we've discovered that they don't actually talk to issues of Triple B. So it could be that somebody is complaining about a contractual issue. So those we have to do a non investigation. And some were closed because they finished doing the work. We've issued 85 findings, and then we've also concluded 9 alternative dispute resolutions. Part of that is that at times you realize that the matter does not really need to go for prosecution, but you want the people that have been wronged to benefit from the years where they have not been getting distributions or economic interest. So through this alternative dispute resolution, that's when then you do the intervention to say, so many, the person has been a director for so many years, they never benefited, then you owe them so much. And also part of the money has gone to SAS NACFAS. We've requested companies as well to say they must contribute towards NAFAS, because I mean we have this issue of taxes must fall, where chiefs are saying we don't have money to go to university, so we're saying to these companies, as part of that settlement, they must also contribute towards NAFAS, and so far I think we have done that here. And then other advocacy, we're given input, and I think the chair didn't remember, we're part of the, we were coming here on the financial services sector code, and we've also given our input on the construction sector code, the property, and the competition amendment bill, amongst others, as well as the draft procurement bill. So those are some of the interventions that as a commission we have done. We also have a mandate to receive transactions, that's a triple D measure transaction. Any transaction that's over 25 million must be registered with the BBB Commission. But you don't only register them, you also assess them to check that they are aligned to the BBB Act. So far, we've received 341 transactions and 212 were registered. Now, I see that you said 102 have been rejected. The rejected is where they will register a transaction and then you say to them, but where is the shoulder agreement? Or where is the financing agreement? Then the documents are not coming. Now it tells that even black people will sign on documents, will bind themselves to this transaction without even understanding what they are binding themselves to. Because if you say you've concluded a contract, but you don't have the papers, how is that possible? So when you ask for these documents and they don't submit them, we reject, but then the rejection means they must still come back when everything has been signed and submit those documents. Because we want to look at them and ensure ourselves that black people are not being taken advantage of. Now, also, we're supposed to receive compliance reports are from your JSE, the state companies, your CITAS, and your Oriental State. So far, we've received 327, and we've assessed 308 just to check that there's compliance within those. And Chairperson, we're happy to report that you have seen an increase from government. So if you recall last time when we were here, we've been warning that government is not getting verified and submitting their reports. So, and SARS is part of those that actually has submitted their compliance report. So we're happy to engage you to report that there's been an improvement on that score. And also, Chairperson, to mention that we met with the Auditor General last year, the Auditor General Office last year, and as of this year, part of their auditing of the annual report would include BBB in. So they'll be taking that year. So I think for us, this has been quite an achievement, because now they would now audit the annual report to check that government is also reporting. Yeah. But what they said to us is that for now, they would not look at the municipalities in terms of how the legislation is crafted, because it talks about PSMA and doesn't mention yes. So for now, then that one they would not look at, but as far as all other entities, they will be auditing them on compliance with BBBEE. We have also then done a national status report 2016-2017. If you recall, members, part of the functions is that you're supposed to look at the state of transformation to see how we're looking like. And we've done two reports, and I think they were submitted to Parliament. If not, we'll make sure that copies are delivered so that you can see what came out of that. But we've done a summary as well on this report. And then we've also done five practice guides. Practice guides is when a matter keeps coming repeatedly, and we realize that there's a need and to clarify it to the general public, and then we'll do a practice guide to say this is how this matter is interpreted, and this is how you should be looking at it moving forward. And you've also issued 120 advisory opinions. Opinions is where companies, before they put a structure into place or transaction or initiative, they'll come to the commission and say, we've got these draft documents. Can you please assess them for us and give us comfort that they are aligned to the BBBEE Act? And then that's the service that we currently are offering for free, and we advise companies on their initiatives. We also have what you could call interpretation of the legislation. So we've issued 2,662 clarifications based on that. We've also held annual conferences. So far, we have had four conferences, and the chairperson has spoken at two of those conferences. One was targeting women, just looking at women empowerment, which we had last year. And we have had 187 workshops and information sessions. Just to report to Parliament, chairperson, last year when we were here, we recommended that we are not targeting rural areas. So we're happy to report that after the session, we have had quite a robust engagement in some of these areas. And lastly, we also went to the deputy minister who goes to most of these rural areas. We have another engagement coming next week in Harding. So we're spreading ourselves as far as the content. And we've also considered a memorandum of understanding with your SARS, your CIPC, your National Gambling Board, your Commission for Employment Equity, and also the KZN Department of Economic Development, and SANAS as well, amongst others, which are assisting us, because especially in terms of referrals, we need to refer a case. It's easier to do that when we have agreements with those entities. Now, in terms of just the state, Chairperson, what we have done is just to give you a sense of how we look like in terms of complaints, clarification, and advice and opinions. But that's the summary has already been provided. What you said you'll do is that you'll do a compliance strategy followed by corrective enforcement. And then if those two don't work, then only then we'll use the heavy arm of investigation. And which is why we're mentioning the issues of misrepresentation letters and website visits. So we must say that we have seen quite an uptake on our compliance services. And only when we realize that there's really a serious contravention, then we refer to enforcement. And then also advice was sought on ownership skills. And then complaints, and so as we mentioned last year, we are sending 83% of the cases that are lodged on complaints were on fronting. That still continues to rise, and now it's over 85% of cases that are complaints that are lodged are on fronting. And also we're seeing now the creation of 51% black-owned entities, where it's more like an opportunistic intermediary. Chairperson, you find that the holding company is still the one that's benefiting, the one still doing the job. So the black person is just holding this 51%, but they are not doing anything. The work is done by the holding company, but the 51% will go and turn, like, get contracts, and then those contracts will then pass to the holding company. Even the money, when it comes in, it just passes through this 51% black-owned entity into the holding company. But what also has now come to attention is that there's even 51%, so-called 51% black-owned entities that have no black shareholding at all. So two white gentlemen will set themselves out and sign a petition saying we are 51% black-owned. But when you look at the structure, you find that there's no black person at all. They are just passing themselves as a black company. So these are some of the things that we're coming across, Chairperson. And then we've mentioned the other steps. And then when you look at the complaint centers, I think last year, if you recall, when we were here, we mentioned that mining, construction, ICT, and transport, that's where funding is prevalent. And I'm happy to report that the status quo has not changed. But what we thought we'll do in the next financial year, is to hold hearings now, go to communities and identify especially these four problem areas, and then do hearings so that we have a wider pool of people that then we assist instead of just looking at one individual cases that are coming through. So that's going to be one of the interventions that we'll be putting into place from the next financial year. Again, the issue of funding, though, comes into play, Chairperson, because if you don't have money, you cannot have a bigger pool as we want to do, but we'll do as much as we can. And then when you look at the stats on my right, we have referred two matters to court, and then we've referred three matters for prosecution, and then 18 matters we have referred to other regulatory institutions, which you should yourselves and your CIPC. And then we concluded ADR when we issued 19 final findings and preliminary findings. That means you finish the case and then you send to the respondent to say these are the findings that are coming out, and then they get 30 days to come back and give feedback. And then depending on what they give you, then you issue final findings to say now the case, the matter is closed. And then cases closed, I think, as I mentioned, is 167. With BBB transactions, we have dealt with that. The main thing to mention there is that 33% of those that we have seen, they include trust models, which benefit your workers and communities and other collective gains. And then some have actually been referred back chairperson for remedial concerns where they were not aligned to the BBB Act. And I must say some of the entities have come back positively and aligned, but there are others that have refused, and then those who have refused were referred for investigation. With annual compliance report, as you mentioned, that initially when we started, there was zero reporting from government, which has gone slightly up. You can see from public entities, the number has now moved to 57, which is quite an improvement. With CITAS, we're still battling there, it's only 2, and then organization of state, it's 4. But we believe that as from this year, the number should go up, given that we have that engagement with Auditor General's office. Now, I mentioned earlier that we also produced your national CITAS report and transformation. This is just to show you the 2017 report. It showed that on the JSE, the ownership of by black women is standing at 9%. Black ownership, it was found to be 27%, with 9% of that being women. Yeah, and then that 60% of companies were level 5 to non-compliant, only 40% were on level 4 to level 1. Management control was found to be less than 50%. And skills development, most entities are battling to implement skills development to less than 50%, including enterprise and supply development. Now, when you look at this block, it says white, it's 58%, male, are still, as you can see, ownership is still high there, but white female, 4%, and then blacks, management control, blacks, 20%, and then female, 18%. So there's still a lot as a country that you need to do towards ownership and transformation, including all the other elements that the commissioner mentioned. And then the main challenges, the commissioner did touch on this. She stressed very clearly that we're squatting at NGP, because we call it squatting. I mean, the minister was there last year, he can attest to what it looks like. I mean, members can do a site, a visit to see how we are. But I think we like it because we started with a young team. So we're not bemoaning. We're there to work and to service the country. Other things we just say we'll live with it until it qualifies. We're supposed to be working with 123 staff complement. As the commissioner mentioned, we're only 39 currently. And then there's also an issue of lack of operational systems. And again, that chairperson has to do the fact that you have to hire through DTI and government procurement, which affects our turnaround time. And also our budget, we projected that we have 138, we'll have a 0% budget. So that does affect our work, but we believe that if we do get listed and we get allocated the budget line, we should be able to move at even higher speed than where we are currently. And then the objectives, we won't touch on this, chairperson in the interest of time, but the commissioner will just then wrap up, I think.
Thank you, Chair. Adding to what Busi has highlighted, Chair, I must also, because the National Lottery Commission is also here today, just to indicate that they are also one of the entities in government that has submitted their compliance report, fully compliant. So I must indicate that as well, Chair. Chair, as we have indicated, Busi has touched on the investigations and the alternative dispute resolution agreement that we also facilitate to resolve some of the matters. The only thing that I just need to mention in respect of that, Chair, is that what we are finding is that entities that want to enter into alternative dispute resolutions are demanding that this be kept private and confidential. The commission is a regulator. We will not enter into any private settlement. So any agreement that is entered into and facilitated by the commission will be of public knowledge, and that information will be available to the public for the public to see. So
So we will not address that or even attend and honor some of those demands that are made by the respondents. So where alternative dispute resolution is not possible, then we'll move the matter in its logical course and make findings, and if we've got to refer for prosecution, we'll do so. Chair, the other thing that I also need to mention in terms of the investigation is that we have issued findings to a number of entities. However, Chair, one of the things that I mentioned the last time is that the legislation puts a restriction on the Commission. So the Commission cannot publish any of its findings up until a certain period lapses. So what we've done is that we've issued findings to entities, and then the entities have now indicated, we think we're going to review the Commission's findings. Once they've said that, we've got to wait for 180 days for them to exercise that right to go and review our decision. During that period, we cannot publish what our findings are. So we've seen that this is a serious constraint, and none of the effective regulators have got a gagging order of that nature, and the Commission has got that. So we see that a number of entities are taking advantage of that. They have not served us with the papers for the review, but we've got to wait for that 180 days to lapse. So it's one of the things that we've indicated that as part of the amendments, when they are done, that we just correct that to just give the Commission sharp teeth to be able to bite. So the other thing that I also wanted to add to Busi's presentation was in relation to the Measure B transactions, those transactions over 25 million, of 25 million and above. We have received 341 of them, but what we've also done, Chair, is now to do a thorough analysis of those transactions. So we have given a group of analysts 275 of those transactions to analyze in detail. So we will, at our conference on the 14th of March this year, release the report for that. So what this report will show you, Chair, is how many of these transactions, for instance, are funded by government institutions, how many are funded by the entities themselves, like vendor financing, what are the restrictions that we are finding in them, and also how many of them include broad-based schemes, and do the independent analysts think that there will be a flow of those benefits to those community schemes and employee schemes and so forth. So it will give us that. So we've seen the draft report that is already giving us a good indicator. That will also help us, I think, and the committee to see whether this BBB legislation is really working. And I must mention, Chair, that most of the transactions, the BEE deals are vendor financed. So over 50% of them are vendor financed. So in terms of just concluding, I will go to the last slide, not this one. So just in terms of concluding there, we've got a slide that is projected there. This is really just to say, based on what we have seen, based on what we think can be done going forward, these are the issues that we think immediately can address the basic and technical elements that are a binding constraint to BBBE. We've indicated the issue of immediate allocation of the resources to the Commission as a regulator. It needs to function, it needs to operate. And if we can look at what we can do now with no resources, we think that if you can give us real resources in the next administration, we'll fly. And so we will be able to make an impact in this country. And I think, Chair, it is important that going forward that there is a strong message about BBBE as a priority to create inclusivity, because that is what the legislation was created for. And we want to appeal also for consistent messaging around it as well, because inconsistent messages also make the industry uncertain. Some people think that there's going to be a change in BEE, so some of them are hesitant as to whether they should actually have proper plans. So it's important that we've got proper consistent messaging. And also, Chair, we've recommended that the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, they should also monitor that all government entities are complying and effectively implementing BBB within government. And we are happy that a number of processes are already leading towards that direction. Chair, we also think that there's an opportunity that we might be missing. In terms of the legislation, the enterprise and supply development funds that are available in entities, as well as skills funds, we think that there should be an opportunity to pool these funds, because we've noted in the report that we'll see shared with you that entities are unable to even meet 50% of their targets. So they are not spending the 6% on enterprise and supply development. They are spending less than that because they are not able to find programs that are enough to deploy it. So if that money can be pulled into a particular structure so that that money is not lost back to the companies, but that it can actually be deployed by other entities, I think that will be a plus. And we've recommended to make this recommendation to the DTI. We also think, Chair, that the amendments should be done in the next administration, not in terms of the, we don't believe that the Act is uncertain about what BBB is, but we think that we need to just make sure that the implementation tools are effective. So we just want to improve it for that purpose. Chair, in conclusion, we also want to appeal to Parliament to, in broad terms, look at the issue of access to finance to black people. It still remains a constraint and a challenge that we are picking up in all of the transactions. As I've indicated, most of the transactions are vendor financed, not because black people want it vendor financed. They actually do not have funding when they approach financial institutions, and they get themselves in the vendor financing arrangements that sometimes do not have favorable terms. And the last thing I think also to be looking at is the market structure. Even where black people have got market funding, when they are supposed to operate, they're still monopolies, there's still also abuse of dominance, there's still a lot of collusion that is taking place. That also needs to be addressed, and some of the barriers to entry in some of the industries are still making it difficult for black people to sustain themselves, even where they've got funding. So those two areas do become a challenge in general, and they impact in terms of the success of BBB. Chair, we'll stop that at that with the presentation, and thank you very much for the opportunity again.
We thank you, Commissioner. This BBBEE, we have tracked all along from its infancy, and we are very mindful of the critical role it plays in the country. But simply before I turn to the committee members for engagement, I think if we can have, is it Jacob Mapatu, the Chief Director, you know, just to clarify the issue, because when this Act legislation was drafted and engaged upon, we did so very seriously with many legal people, including state law advisors, on the spot. So what exactly is the challenge you are facing, so that then we'll engage after that input?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning once more. Thanks to the Commissioner and colleagues on the presentation. As you said, Chair, the role of the Commission is very important. In 2013, when we amended the BEE Act, we recognized at the time that for us to have a strengthened implementation of BEE in the country, we needed to have an institution like the Commission to be able to, you know, to do that. So that as the department, we focus on policies, on advocacy and other areas, but that we need an institution that will show that there is full adherence to the, you know, to the law, to the BEE as a policy. And we are glad that the Commission is playing that role. with the limited resources, as it has been highlighted, that there's still the issue around the resources due to the listing. But as a department, we are fully behind the process to ensure that the commission is listed. We believe that the Act, confers the independency of the commission from the department. The commission was envisaged as an institution that will be independent, that will be a juristic person on its own, to be able to execute the mandate, including ensuring that as the department were compliant. So that's the, our view as the department. So we are engaging with Treasury, and we've been, talking to them as recently as last week, to push that message that we would like, we support as a department that the commission should be listed. And, they've been highlighting certain clauses within the Act, that based on their criteria, they are delaying the process to ensure that the commission is listed. But as I said, we, as the department, our role has been to ensure that there is an understanding in terms of why the commission was established, and also why is it important that it needs to be listed or independent, so that it can execute the mandate. So those discussions with Treasury are ongoing, and as soon as there is a definite way forward, we will be able to give feedback to Parliament on that issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So members,
thank you
for very much for Commissioner. It's over to yourselves to comment, engage, raise questions. So by show of hands, I'll recognize you. Right. Honourable Khadebe, Honourable Guyane, Honourable Mantash. Done that, but the whipped hand was going quite determinedly. Yes. So next time, leave the hand down once I've recognized it. The Honourable Boyani, the Honourable Mantash, the Honourable Khadebe.
Thanks, man. Let's first welcome the report and the presentation. It shows that we really go with someone. That is, I'll need a brief clarity in terms of what is to be done. You want to then share only of people from outside, white people, buying shares of 49%, and giving back 51% and so on. Yesterday, Father was here, presenting Mekong company with 51% of back, sitting on the reception. So that is exactly what you must get the chance to. We've got two companies that they named of supplying various engineering companies. They said Mekong, Sia Harbor, and Denport. Those companies must be researched, investigated, so that we get a clear report next time when the Triple B Commission is coming. Because we told here yesterday that we are Triple B and 100% make home with 51%, and they are sitting at the reception and the commission itself. And also here at the department, we are having health and three match in the upgrade. We also want to check as to how many of those health and three make in the upgrade. chairing the issue of the market, I just wanted to check whether they're working hand in hand with the competition policy in terms of the access to
clarify your question on the black industrialists. Were you requesting the BEE Commission to explain whether those black industrialists had companies and what percentage share they had? Right, okay. Let's move on to the Honourable Montani.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to welcome the presentation by the Commission and want to appreciate the ground they've covered on a zero budget. We really appreciate it. Not many people could do that from the show. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't comment. I'm not that good. Now we understand why many organizations are now so vocal to say this BEE must be done away with. Because it takes away what they have been enjoying over time. So they will say they have black man directors, and yet they don't directors, there's nothing out of the partnership that they are in. So we want to assure the commission that they have the full support of this committee in doing what they are doing in all parts of the country. We hope that the state parliament would enact a regulation that would limit the 180 days complaining about. Because we're about to arrive, we can't do anything for now, but we so wish that the next parliament, we don't know whether we'll be here or not. It is astonishing that we've been calling for the independence in financial terms of the commission, but up to now, there has been no movement. I don't know what we need to ensure that this happens because it hinders the progress of the commission. But Chairperson, from where I'm sitting, I'm very much happy of the performance of the commission. Yes, I hear they say they've been to a bunch of rural areas, but for me, the rural areas are not in the general. Every entity that comes here, every department that comes here will say we went to KBS. Why don't you prioritize other rural provinces? Like Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, you're not in Cape, etc. Please, you've been doing this, I've been watching you. If you talk rural, you talk KBS. Why? I'm not against KBS, but can you consider that all the provinces are also rural? Whether it's a department, whether it's an editor of the government, they go to Cape and I'm not in
that. I think your point's well made, and there's Northern Cape, Limpopo, and others. Yeah. Honourable Masa Khadebe, you wanted to go last, you said. So Honourable Maklobo is next.
No, thanks, Chair. My apologies for being an out today. Serious matter as well. Thanks, manage. Chair, let's just thank the team on the presentation and reaffirm the ANC's government on its commitment on the question of redressing the imbalances of the past. Because, you know, there is a season here where other people are causing confusion that redressing the imbalances of the past is something that must not happen, when our constitution is very clear on that one, Chair. And we must not be ambiguous when we rise as this free parliament of our resoluteness and steadfastness in our belief that the injustices and the inequalities of the past must be corrected. Well, the team has done well, but there are certain things that I think going forward they need to be elevated. Moving from issues of compliance to actually proactive intervention, drawing certain lessons. One of the things that has been held back over some time is the imperatives of the BEE Act, which are actually being hindered by the Preferential Public Policy Procurement Framework Act. And it's been more than 14, 15 years that this thing is actually giving problem, because if you look at one of the biggest leverage to actually empower our people, we can actually leverage the state procurement. And the state procurement, you know, that in the main, is only the most biggest determinant is price. And the alignment of the two legislations has been at its main stage. And until Comrade Chair, we are beginning to arrive in a fading memory. And why is it difficult to do that? Secondly, if you look at the procurement regime, you have to be able to insist, apart from department saving BE policies or strategies, to actually, from a planning point of view, ensure that these imperatives of BE are actually embedded there. And you find the mechanism working with the treasurer, working with the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, that these imperatives are actually there. Not only the imperative that talks about ownership and control, but especially the element around enterprise development and others. And you can even look when they are actually producing their procurement plan. These other imperatives are not actually included there. And people can submit as entities, you know, those compliance certificates. We have a SARS, SARS certificate, we have a company certificate, we have a BE certificate. Those are the issues about historically to say the S is where are we standing. But then there is an opportunity. There is a procurement or there is a tender that is on the table. These are other imperatives that are not included, Comrade Chair. Then there is this biggest issue around how BE instruments can be used, because it cuts across around the question of localization, the local content, including the local production working with these other entities. I think after so many years now, we need to change it, because we understand the territory between that. It's not that we would probably would want them to respond now, but then there should be the front end and the back end in terms of how we actually do that. In other words, we need to have more teeth, but also have more capacity, so that you can bring in your early warning system. How do you use an early warning system, for an example? There's a requirement by law that each and every tender that is actually being given out in the public sector, whether it must be advertised after it has been issued. Who are these people that are looking at whether we are compliant or non-compliant? Do we have the veto powers that during the time that thing is actually out, they're being advertised to say it has been issued to this company, can you go and veto because there's non-compliance? Because there are too many missed opportunities. And how does the performance management system and the other issues in terms of consequence management for not meeting targets? I'm happy that the AG is starting to work with you very closely. We actually even got a report. There is a lot of other things that we need to do, but we've reached a point to say that, do we understand where are the points of intervention, and if we do well, rather than to chase the whole animal running around, where are the pit stops? And if the pit stops, do we put the right measures? Like when the car comes in there, you can be able just using those electrodes. I don't know what is the other way. But if you put them, you can be able to say, this is how I'm sensing the temperature of the performance of the system, and then you intervene. But on the back end, I'm very happy. But on the front end, so that we don't actually miss opportunities, it's something that you need to be able to look at it, because people are trying to beat the system. And that's why other people are saying that we have not done enough. And I think we can still do more. DTI, let's look at also the funding monthly. There is a complaint now around the question of inadequate funding. There are constraints, but what is the best funding monthly about institutions that are playing an important role? Your role is more constitutional. More constitutional, because the addressing the imbalances of the past is a recognition by our own constitution. Ngiyabonga, sir.
Honorable Chair, Chairperson, I also confirm with my colleagues that this report is good. Although it provides detail of the two cities, it's like the best of times and the worst of times. The worst of times is the fact that we have this key institution, which is supposed to address the historical legacy of underdevelopment of the black people. It looks like it is not taken serious. While serving only the staff component of the DNA, does not have a budget. That one is an exact chief director is an adjustment to the DCI and that what I got. Because what we expected here when we had this commission, when we discussing it in the field during that time, that there's nothing as dangerous as a country that you find that 25 years after Uhud, after the liberation, you find that the people who are liberated are not empowered. That's why you are going to have the state of counter-revolution. That's what the premise in which we discussed this thing. So, but what is worrying Chairperson is that the National Treasury and the DGI looks like they're not coming to the party. This bill was passed in 2018. It is 2019, and then it's still is just like an unfunded mandate, which is wrong. I think that the issue of the time frames, we must have the time frames when this thing is going to be settled. Because we can no longer wait any longer. Because we suffered too much. We went into the struggle precisely because we wanted a better life for all. So it looks like here this thing is in the snail space. We cannot agree on that on the side of the DGI and the National Treasury. But here, at the same time, I will say that it is also a best of times, because one, the issue that they did hit the ground running without anything, that one they must be commended for that. They must be commended and supported. So that as we have allocated, the department has allocated the budget for that, where it has ring-fenced that for these purposes, I think that in the next budget, whatever is coming, we must ensure that we have such funding so that they can go and work on the ground. But what is also very important here, what is their relationship with the unit of Invest South Africa on the DGI? Because what happens here is that this issue of broad-based black economic empowerment is always fleshed out there by a counter-revolutionary that it is going to undermine investment. You know that the president has a target of $100 billion in the next 5 years as an investment to South Africa. But now and again, something unprecedented happened 4 weeks ago, where the ambassadors of various countries wrote an open letter to the president. The broad-based black economic problem was one of the aspects they were raising. So what is your actual problem to the British chambers of the foreign countries? We've got an American chamber of business here in South Africa. We've got those who, from the European Union. What's your engagement with them? When Invest South Africa goes outside, are you part of that so that you go and explain it to them? There can be no peace in South Africa unless there's empowerment of all the people. I think that aspect is very important. But what I want to comment here is the issue of pooling the funds for NEFSAS. I think part of the process of economic empowerment was the issue of the skills development. I think you must be commended around that, but what I'm interested in, how much did you raise for NEFSAS on that particular regard? And the issue of over-criminalization, actually, Chair, I understand the aspect they're coming from. That there are certain administrative, certain things can be done administratively, but the issue of having a very big stick is necessary. Is necessary, in particular when dealing with this big tender. I'll make an example. When Transnet procured these locomotives and all those things, a lot of money was spent there. What was supposed to have happened is that a lot of locally landlords, the emerging their business people should have benefited out of that. So I'm very happy that the Auditor General is going to come in there and deal with that. But as you said that you are engaging the Department of Public, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, it must not only end up at the issue of head of department level, it must also go to the head of the state owned entities. Because that's where large performance are taking place. They must also be locked in. So that part of that performance is how do they comply with that. And then I'd like to congratulate those departments and entities which are cooperating with you, which are complying with that dividend scorecard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Sir David. Just a couple of points. There was reference to more than 50% of the transactions being vendor financed. And, you know, when I heard that, I wasn't too sure what you were actually referring to. Are you referring to the province or what, you think, from the first instance? Is that your hand up? Because did you? Well, do speak then, please, on the book of Charlie.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the report. As far as I am concerned, it's a report based on your mandate, which is the state of company, and you appear to be delivering on your mandate, such as it is. And I was going to leave it there. But the Honorable Mushoba's comments thinly veiled on some people who do not care for the grace, I think merits an answer. And a comment. Because it cannot go unanswered. No one in their right mind, and I think I challenge anybody on this committee, present or not present, to say that they do not believe in redressing the society. I think everyone does. However, I want to make it patently clear in response that the DA believes in an open society for all. The very word used by the Honorable Radebe here in his lengthy interjection, he used the word all. I endorse that. We believe in an open society for all and not a crony, closed society for some.
With due respect, Dr. Trouble, I just want to make a small intervention. I don't think it was warranted at this point to talk about cronyism per se. I think you did make the point about redress and let's get engaged there. Honourable Williams, followed by the Honourable Matthew Paul.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't think it's unrealistic for the members of the African National Congress to challenge the rate in which our economy is being transformed, or whether black people are actually being moved into positions of leadership and control of our companies, because the figures that have been presented us today says that there's 27%, you know, and that's over 25 years, so that's like a 1.1% transformation per annum. It's unbelievable. Are we saying that, is the DA suggesting that it's going to take 75 or 80 years for this economy to be transformed on their model? You know, it's a little bit ludicrous. I would personally say, in my experience as a white South African, that there's been very little transformation when it comes to business in South Africa, and fundamentally, white people still own and control the majority of everything in South Africa. So I don't think it's unrealistic for ANC members to raise these questions, because the facts are there, right there as we see them. Fundamentally, transformation is happening far too slow for there to be meaningful redress of the apartheid regime that the Democratic Alliance themselves were part of that government and collaborated with the apartheid government. So I don't think that we should be so negative about the... we shouldn't be negative that there is transformation. What we should be doing is saying, why isn't there more transformation? Thank you.
Comrade Chair, without reducing your committee to a debate, because Honorable Kachara has just chosen to respond, probably we need another platform.
That's right.
To do this. But which is one of the things that he can't represent the ANC and misrepresent. They are on record. They don't support EE and affirmative action. It's on record. And what he would want us to do, if he wants to challenge me, we'll arrange with the ANC. We'll meet on actually telling the South African who we are, what we stand for. But I've just quoted the Constitution without naming the DA, that we recognize the injustices of our past. It's a fact. And in terms of trying to heal the object of this sovereign state, Comrade Chair, we said that the values of human dignity, the achievement of equality, black people have been deprived of their worth and existence and made pariahs in their own country. And when our forefathers, they made this constitution, there was a recognition who we are, where we come from. And then we chose to build a society based on certain values that our forefathers of the ANC, of non-racialism, non-sexism, but a society that is more prosperous. Therefore, we cannot be feeling guilty being in our march. But I will not reduce your comment to this. At any platform, Comrade Kachala, ask for a debate, we'll meet there. Thank you.
I think we just don't have the time. There are differences of opinion on this, various differences. And I think that we need to note this was one of the issues that the committee could not reach any convergence on, per se. But we don't have the time, and I do want to complete this part of the program, of the agenda. I was making a reference to the Fender's issue, the financing thereof. It wasn't clear who specifically in Fender or whether it was the province itself that was funding this. The other issue is, of course, the point about the lack of funding. In many ways, it is linked to what National Treasury seeks as a clarification or a clarification on the status per se. And that was one of the letters I referred to right at the beginning of the meeting, in which the Minister had written to the Speaker with reference to the second report and made a reference to the BBBE Commission and that they were in fact engaging with National Treasury. So the reason I read this up then was because it refers to what we're doing, but it was also indicated that this was likely to be finalised only in the sixth Parliament. See, we're coming to the end now. But it was purely an indication. It wasn't a full decision, because I see certain people in the BBBE looking at me with alarm. You know, no, when someone says we will be engaging, you know, they're busy going to be briefed. But what the question on your presentation, which I wanted to raise, and which I can see we may be requiring some of this back in writing, is with the reference to black ownership at 27%, was shifted, I think, about the loss of 5%, let me just see something like that. What is responsible? You had a black ownership of 32, there's a decline. What are the issues responsible for this decline? I mean, we can't decline, we must increase. It's quite serious. The last point here that I want to refer to is that the committee is seized with ensuring that adequate funding is made available. That was in our comments here, which is why it was taken up with the Speaker by the Minister. And it'll be in our legacy report, because it's going to go forward from this set of minutes, that this must be effectively addressed. We cannot hold this back. And anyone who wants to, clarify what the different views are on BBBE, there's no better place to look at than the various party manifestos, but even before that, when the legislation was passed in Parliament itself and the process thereof. But I do want to thank you, and I am sorry that we're running out of time. I'm very pleased that the Auditor General now is going to be undertaking that specifically, you know, the compliance, that will be one of the issues that will be in the report, and that's a really big step forward. So, members, so that you are fully aware of where we are, we're going to get some of the responses now, but there are some, such as the question I asked, which can come back in writing, and that's the point. Is this another comment or question, Honourable Mantash? Because we really have run out of time.
No, anyway, I'm offended by that. That's just one thing. That's not the only letter that they said in letter to the speaker, where they are saying the National Chamber has advised that they are not in a position to leave the entity due to waiting in the current legislation. And for me, that's too general. Well, I would agree that they would have been specific to say this is the E, this is the paragraph in the A, so that we can look into A.
Well, certainly the triple B double E is aware through Jacob. I'm sure you can respond to that, can you not? But like I say, you have actually got less than 5 minutes to respond. So it either comes in writing or what you can do now, and that's critical that we have that information. All right.
Jacob, do you want to respond?
Thank you, Chair. We will in detail respond in writing, but I just wanted to highlight that in the Act, there's a clause that says the Commission is established within the administration of the NTI. Now, in the interpretation by National Treasurer is that talks to it not being an entity. So the discussion that I highlighted as well, ongoing engagement with them in terms of clarifying that it's around mostly on that clause, but also with other related issues.
I think there will be more detail in writing to us. Over to the Commissioner.
Chair, we know we don't have much time, but can I just request to just respond to some of the questions quickly, especially also highlighting the issue around the black industrialists and the role that we play in that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chairperson, I won't take too much time. In terms of the black industrialist applications, initially were requested by DTI to assess them for them before they could go for adjudication, but somewhere in around 2017 it stopped. We were not given reasons why, but we had started the assessment and we are available to assist moving forward if they do ask us. And then the relations with Competition Commission, we've gotten a memorandum of understanding with them as well. We just didn't add them on the slide, but we do have a working relationship, and they have prepared some matters to us as well to look at them for them. So there is a relationship there. And then in terms of the 51% black-owned entities and what triple B is really means, if you recall that, I mean, triple B is really talking at the empowerment of black people, South African black people, your black Indian and colored. For foreigners, for instance, if you are a foreign company in the country and you are what you call an exempt micro enterprise, that means you are less than, you're making less than 4 million, 10 million, then what you'll get is a level 4, automatic level 4. But if it's a black entity that's 100% black owned, then you get an automatic level 2 and 100% automatic level 1. So it recognizes or gives special recognition to companies that are black owned and within the country. What we have seen is that most government entities, not just SOEs, most government entities, what they don't do is what you call due diligence before they issue out contracts. So a company will come to them and say what is the black owned. They don't go and actually interview or look for those black people and see that what they present is the reality. And at times, some of them will say to us, can you look at this certificate? Certificate alone won't tell you that the company is black or not. You need to actually see the individual to satisfy yourself that the company is what it looks like. So what we encourage government departments to say, before you issue a contract or a tender, if something doesn't feel right, follow up and check for yourself, but don't rely on just a certificate alone to say they say that the trans person is black owned and therefore that the trans person is black owned. I've just given an example to say we're seeing now even companies that have purely white owned claiming to be 50% black owned. So if you don't do your due diligence, you might miss those companies or they might fall through the cracks. Now in terms of the rollout, we don't just do KZN. We have a relationship with Mpumalanga, the economic development of Mpumalanga, your Limpopo economic development leader. We also are working with the Northern Cape economic development. So we have been to those areas and as well as Free State. So we have been to other rural areas, not just in KZN, and it's just that that's the name that came very quickly to mind, but we've been to Kwaka, to Buruman, to Dawong, so we are spreading. Point taken. on the issue of the relationship with InvestSA, they have referred some matters to us, and we have also presented to the EU, European Union, and the Commission, the American Chamber. We also presented to the Italian Chamber and the Danish government. So we asked, as you mentioned, some of the resources are constrained. We cannot reach as many people as we like to. And the foreign trips have not been undertaken because of the limited resources. But as soon as we get resources, then we'll be able to expand the services. But there have been those engagements. We have started with those. Yeah. They might be at a limited level currently, but there is work happening.
Just to conclude on the question, there was a question that talked to localization and VE. I think I just want to address them by way of an example, Chair, and to illustrate how serious this is. We have an investigation that we undertook where a tender of government of about, actually it's over 25 billion, was awarded. And on the basis that there is a VE partner. And during our investigation, Chair, we actually did a site visit to see the black partner who's supposed to be a beneficiary or at least a partner of that 25 billion tender. We found one little office, Chair, that space is too big for that office. That is supposed to be the VE partner that is benefiting from that 25 billion. There's there's seats for two people in that office. There's basically nothing. So it's just a line so that when somebody phones and say, this company doesn't exist, then it does exist. And I'm not talking about an entity that is, like, it's a big tender. It's a big government tender. So at least some due diligence of just checking whether these BE partners exist or do not exist is important. And in one other matter, Chair, that we looked at, where black people were claimed to be part of a transaction, a part of a deal, we have an obligation as a commission to look and find a black person, a human being. Every time when we go down and deep into the transaction, we cannot find a black person. And the only responses that we get from these entities, especially where there's like a structure that is created by certain black people that are connected, they tell us, no, this structure, we've had this structure for years. It's been like this for years. It was endorsed by the Department of Trade and Industry a long time back and so forth. We tell them, we've got to find a black person. If it's black owned, there must be a black person owning. It can't be black owned in name. So, Chair, I must just indicate that for localization, we're going to find it very difficult if you have that kind of an example that I gave you. But also, in one of the matters that we investigated where we made findings as well, a tender of about 4 to 5 billion was awarded to an entity that has 0% black ownership, that does not even have a B certificate, that does not even have anything in this country, when there were other entities that were competing with it, which had the credentials. So we've made findings in respect of that. But all we're saying, Chair, is that all of those things are the things that are undermining empowerment, and they're undermining localization, because part of that 25 billion tender was that the BE partner was going to be developing the components for this particular tender, and they're developing nothing. There's like nothing that is being developed. So it is important that we look at it within that context. Just to respond to Honorable Masako's point around proactive and reactive, yes, we're looking at that. When we started, we looked at where exactly are we going to make our impact to make sure that BE really succeeds. We looked at government spending. Government spending is exactly the reason why the BBB legislation is like this. So we went and said, government is not doing what government needs to be doing. And then we came to this parliament and said, can you also help us to make sure that we make sure that government does it? And we reported that we've already engaged the AG. Now they're going to monitor that. And then there is a tracking provision that this committee included in the BE legislation. We wanted to implement it immediately when we came in, Chair. But then we, in our engagement with government, with the DTI and the National Treasury, they informed us we are actually aligning. There's a procurement bill that is in place. Chair, we've been waiting for that procurement bill. So now we cannot wait. We've got to implement the tracking provision, unfortunately. Because we've waited since 2016 when we started. 2017, 2018, the procurement bill is not coming. So the legislation continues to be unaligned to what needs to be happening. So we'll be implementing the tracking provision effective from this financial year. I think we've given adequate opportunity for the entities to align. Chair, we'll give a written response in terms of the amount that has already been paid to NASFAC. We'll give that. We don't have the figures exactly, and we don't want to give Parliament the wrong information. Chair, in terms of our vendor finance, the clarification that you needed, where there's a BE transaction, you find that the black person, they buy into a company. That transaction needs to be financed. They need money to buy the stake. So what you then find is that they are begging to get money from the finance institution. Obviously, from the bank is extremely difficult. So we've seen, and as I said, the report that was released on the 14th will show you how much is actually financed by banks, how much is financed by government, how much is vendor finance. So vendor financing means basically that the company that you buy a stake in is the one that loans you the money to buy a stake in it. So often that comes with other restrictions to say the person that loans you the money, then you're supposed to have control over a stake of their company. Then they will put restrictions for you not to even vote in that company. So you're basically not an owner. So that is the danger of it. But the benefit of it, Chair, the benefit of it, remember that BE was about empowerment. It was to enable black people to actually be able to buy into that. So to the extent that at least the money that is coming from the market given to black people to buy the stake is actually good. So the role of the commission is just to make sure that those vendor financing agreements do not put restrictions that make black people not to be able to participate and effectively exercise that right. So that is our role. That's where we come in. But we do not think that there's anything wrong with vendor financing, because yes, if you can't get money from the bank, you must get it from somewhere. Chair, we'll conclude then by saying, Chair, it is important that the commission becomes independent and that it has sufficient resources, because if we do not have that, then our mandate is compromised. And we're going to derail the economic transformation of this country for another 25 years if we do not give the commission the resources that it requires. Chair, I will conclude by saying, Chair, we saw an opportunity when we didn't have the resources to bring in the young people in the organization. As I indicated, we had trainings. We've now absorbed 18 of those trainings. Chair, I'm the oldest person in the organization. So the organization is with young people. So the senior citizens is myself, Busi, and my body here. Everybody else is younger than us. So we actually have got the opportunity to make this commission to be populated by young people, because BE is a unique field. Not everybody's in it. So we've got that opportunity, and we would like to use that opportunity. We'll bring more and more young people, particularly those that have not been employed. So most of these young people were never employed before. So we gave them their first employment, and they put every effort to actually try and make this money to be taken up. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Commissioner. And we look forward to getting the written responses, which will also enhance what has been said and complement what's been said. But we do appreciate the presentation, your time, and we just indicate what we have said to other entities. It is important that the strategic skills that you require in the BBBE Commission, and you've referred to that from time to time, are identified and retained so that you can continue to make progress. But rest assured, this committee did actually establish the BBBE Commission, and it is regrettable that we have hiccup here. But we will appeal to the Minister to expedite a resolution of this as soon as possible. And we wish you well. Thank you. Members, I just have to point out the agenda issues. I myself have been called to the Deputy Speaker's office, and I now have three crises. One, I am a Catholic and therefore have an Ash Wednesday obligation as well. And I intend observing that. And that it does sort of come forward. I do also have a political requirement, much must be fulfilled. And now I'm called to the Deputy Speaker's office at 12:30. So what I'm hoping to do now is have a 5-minute tea break just to enable me to run down and run back. And let's have a 5 minutes of mini break, and I'll be back literally in 3 minutes. How long does it take to go down?